Welcome everyone to the New Diplomatist Podcast. My name is Garrett Sombrato. As always, I'm your host. But today we have something special on tap for you all. It's our guest interview, a personal friend of mine and someone I deeply respect, Dr. Todd Kent. Dr. Kent holds a doctorate in political science from Texas A&M University and a number of other distinguished positions as well. Dr. Kent, welcome to the podcast.
Well, it's great to be here. I look forward to spending the next few minutes with you.
Well, we appreciate having you on as well. Why don't you give the listeners just a short little backdrop of some of your academic experience and what you've been involved with the last few years?
For the past almost 14 years, I've been involved in international higher education. I worked 9 years for Texas A&M University at Qatar, living in Doha in the Middle East, and then pretty much the last 4 years in South Korea, working for the University of Utah. Both of these are branch campuses of the main campuses here in the U.S. So I have a big appreciation for international higher education, and I believe that academics is still the U.S., the best export we have in the United States.
I couldn't agree more with that statement, and it really ties in well with what we're planning on discussing today, which is the situation that the COVID-19 pandemic poses to U.S. leadership in the world, particularly in terms of U.S. relations with immigrants, those who are coming to our nation for various purposes of work or education. And obviously, that's been a contentious subject the last few years, particularly since the advent of the Trump administration. And on April 22nd, the president issued a proclamation preventing new immigrants from entering the United States for 60 days. The idea was to halt the spread of COVID, obviously, from those who might be traveling in and out. But it's also taking on something of a populist tone in recent weeks, as there have been calls to protect American jobs, particularly in the wake that we now have tens of millions of people unemployed. And that sort of culminated in the last week with a letter that was sent by Senators Cotton, Cruz, Grassley, and Hawley, all Republicans, all generally speaking allies of the president, more or less, requesting the suspension of four major visa categories, including the H-2B, for non-agricultural seasonal workers, the H-1B for specialty occupations, the OPT extension for optional practical training for international students, and also the EB-5 for immigrant investors. This is a fairly sweeping shutdown of American immigration. Of course, it's said to be temporary, but it's an interesting move for a party that not that long ago advocated for pretty free and open legal, again, this is legal immigration. So what's your opinions on that, Dr. Kent?
You know, my feeling is that we have got as a country, and I as a Republican, I'm a big supporter of these senators, but I think that they've missed the mark here of what's going on. I think we as a party need to re-examine our relationship with immigration. I'm a big proponent of a strong border protection, but also I think that we need our country's future. We need legal immigration, and that's very important. So what really kind of affected me about this letter was that when they went after OPT or optional practical training, this is a program where if you're an international student and you come to the U.S. legally to study at a U.S. university, you're here for a year and you graduate, then you can apply to stay for 1 year or even a little bit longer if you're in a STEM profession. So what this does is it allows international students to finish their degree and then work if they can find a job. Now, you have to be able to find a job to stay in the United States. So this, by including that, I think it's creating other problems for us. If you would allow me, I'll just kind of talk about that for a second. International students, we have about 1 million right now studying in the United States, spend over $45 billion in our country. By
That's
eliminating
a significant
OPT,
amount.
What's the, yeah, it's a huge amount, especially in right now when we need investment into our country. If you're an international student, you typically come to the U.S. and you pay full price for tuition. So So all these million students are paying full, mostly are paying full price for their tuition. They're spending that money, and then they're able to stay. Now, what attracts them to the U.S. is two things. One is the world's greatest higher education system. So they're coming to learn at the finest universities in the world. They're also coming for this opportunity to stay for a year or maybe a little longer and work and get that training, because that sets them apart if they go back home. Also, our labor market is such that we need, especially in the sciences, we need PhDs that we are not producing enough from internally from the U.S. So it provides a great service to our high-tech area, especially, who needs more and more PhD-level trained individuals to participate in the job market. So this is it's a win-win for the United States. It's also a win for these students. And I think if we eliminate the optional practical training program, what we do is we give a disincentive for students to come here, and they begin to look other places across the world. Education around the world has gotten better and better, but we're still, even though we're still the world's leader, we can't make it more difficult or less appealing for people to come to the U.S.
So sort of leveraging your unique perspective and having held significant academic positions, like you said, in the Middle East as well as in East Asia, what would you say is the foreign perspective on the ability to come to the United States and to study here? Is that a big part of foreign perception of how we stand in the world, or is it more of a pragmatic, hey, the best universities are here, we come here? What would you say is the perception there from outside looking in?
I think the United States is still a tremendous draw with foreign students and who want to come here. They want to have a degree from the U.S. They believe that sets them apart from other people, even in their home countries. I think many of them have a dream to stay here. And we can talk about that in just a minute, that's not necessarily, in a lot of ways, that's a good thing if they are well-trained. You know what? United States, where we have led the world economically because we're innovative. The productivity of our workforce exceeds all other nations by far, and we're innovative, and we need to keep that going. We need to continue that through the future, because that's where our economy is going to continue to drive us. So what these workers these students are doing, they want to come here because they still see this as the place that gives them the best future in their lives.
And so what would your response be in a hypothetical conversation with the authors of this letter? I mean, these are obviously very well-known senators. You know, Ted Cruz toyed with a run for president, came close in that election in 2016 for the Republican side of the nomination. Grassley's obviously been in the Senate a very long time. Cotton and Hawley, both very popular senators inside and outside the party. You know, there's an interesting line in their letter where they state, quote, that foreign students would be taking jobs that would otherwise go to unemployed Americans as our economy recovers, unquote. And they very much pitch the situation as a zero-sum game where every job occupied by someone from overseas, even legal immigration, is a job not occupied by a domestic worker. Is it really such a zero-sum game, or can there be a benefit to both sides?
Well, I think they're wrong on this point, and you brought up the key point of their letter. First of all, most of the jobs lost that we're going to see lost for the near future were lower paying jobs. In fact, I believe that people that made $40,000 and below, 40% are currently unemployed. So this is the area, and I don't believe these students coming over are going to take those positions, because in optional professional training, you have to have a job that fits what you studied. So these students are not going for low level jobs. Now, maybe some of those other visa categories would be doing that, but I'm focusing here on international students coming to the U.S. And also, I think what is left out of and what they have not thought through here is the fact that we have a serious problem in the United States right now. And let me kind of discuss it real quick.
Sure.
We have since 2011, there's been an 11% decrease in the number of college students. It's over 250,000. What that means is some of your colleges around the country, begin to have to shrink in size or even go out of business. We see many universities now who aren't going to make it through this pandemic. So the number of our high school graduates is also flat because of lower birth rates 20 years ago. And finally, our states are putting less money into higher education because they're, and we're going to see, this is going to be a big important issue in the next year because of the state economies have been faced a downturn through the pandemic. They're going to give less money to higher education in their state because it's an easy place to cut. You don't get as many complaints. So what we have is a situation where our institutions of higher education are facing tremendous pressure, and they're going to struggle. What they need, students coming in paying full tuition. In fact, a recent survey of students who are graduating this spring, up to 15 to 20% say they may even defer going to college for a year to see what happens. So what they're talking about putting people not being able to, or putting people out of jobs, their proposal is going to put people out of jobs in universities across our country, which are already facing tremendous pressure. So I think that you saw an attempt to solve a perceived problem, they're going to create a bigger problem in our colleges and universities. And that is what has been the driver of U.S. Innovation and the economy and productivity for years. I think they're putting it in jeopardy.
So I think there's a pretty clear correlation there between the ability of foreign students to come here and make a new life here and to actually benefit our country as well as themselves in a symbiotic relationship that keeps us at the forefront of innovation and the educational system as a whole, like you said. But isn't there also an idealistic stake in all this? You know, I mean, the last 50 years or so, there's been a big debate in this country about how best to curb illegal immigration. And in many respects, I feel that, and perhaps you can agree or disagree on this, but that Donald Trump's election in 2016 sort of either marked the pinnacle or the low point, depending on your perspective, of that debate, where he ran very much on a anti-illegal immigration platform, building the wall, securing the border, the infamous Muslim ban at the beginning of his first few months in office. But now the focus has really shifted away from just stopping illegal immigration to now severely restricting even those coming here legally, like we've been discussing. That echoes back almost a century to the 1920s, when you had laws like the Immigration Act of 1924, which was an act to, in its words, limit the immigration of aliens into the United States and for other purposes, and had a tremendous impact on barring Chinese, Italians, many Jews from Eastern Europe, Greeks, Poles, and so on, from coming to the United States, even on a legal basis. What does this mean ideologically for our country going forward? Is this just an aberration brought about by a crisis in the pandemic that people are overreacting on the Senate side and saying, look, let's close up shop, let's protect the workers? Or is this a new longer-term trend, in your opinion, back to those older policies of domestication of the economy?
Well, that's a great question, and it's probably one we're going to see answered clearly over the next 6 months as we have an election. But, I think that the Trump administration came in with this idea that we need to fix illegal immigration, which we know that there's upwards of 15 million illegal immigrants in the U.S. right now. And some people don't think that's a problem. Others do. I think that's what we're talking about here goes beyond that. We're talking about here is about legal immigration. I'm a believer that we as a country are better off when we allow people to come into our country to learn, to work. It's not a zero-sum game. The pie can get bigger. And so what we need to do, we need an economy that's thriving. And what we had recently was many of our high-tech firms saying, we don't have enough workers. We don't have enough workers who are trained at the level that we can be the world leader in computer applications, software, high-tech areas. We need PhDs who are trained, and we are not producing them domestically. So I think we're better off by allowing people to come in legally. And I don't see, I think that they're misguided. I think what you're seeing here, it's a very political statement that, in this election year, saying, you know, we're looking after your jobs. And I think it's misguided. And I think what the long-term impact is, we're gonna see more loss of jobs, especially in institute, higher education. Now, so to your second question.
Go ahead.
I think there are many in the Trump administration who just want to reduce immigration in general. It doesn't matter what kind of immigration it is. And again, I think I don't believe we're overpopulated, and I don't believe that immigrants hurt us in any way. In fact, I think we're better off. Our birth rate does not allow us to keep up. We're about equal right now, where we're not growing at all. In fact, I lived in South Korea, which had the lowest birth rate in the world. It was beginning to affect their economy. We've seen what happened with Japan, whose birth rate is declining fast. In Europe, we've seen what happens with a low birth rate. So we need to make sure that we don't allow that to hamper our economy. And I think initiatives like this are going the wrong direction.
And so, kind of to round out our discussion here, broaden the picture just even a little bit wider beyond the American question in particular, because I think we can agree immigration is a good thing for our country, that it does have significant benefits across all of the fronts we've spoken of. But does this signal something deeper for globalization as a whole? There's been a lot of hand-wringing in some circles about the death of globalization with the rise of different nationalist leaders around the world. Viktor Orban in Hungary, you know, Donald Trump here, Nigel Farage influencing Brexit in Britain, and then now a pandemic where of all time periods, you see what has kind of been the beacon of globalist theory and action, the European Union, closing their borders en masse on a level that even the migrant crisis didn't produce, because during the migrant crisis four or five years ago, Germany was still accepting upwards of 1 million Syrian refugees over its borders. You know, its neighbors closed off its borders. Germany did not. The moment this pandemic hit, several weeks into the European part of the crisis, Germany shuts off their land borders. For all intents and purposes, the EU ceased to exist as a free trade zone over the last several months because of the coronavirus restrictions. So here's arguably the most liberal, and I mean in the international sense of free trade and free movement of peoples, the most liberal trading bloc in the world, closing up shop temporarily and saying, well, it's a necessity. Does this bode badly long-term for the free movement of peoples around the world, or do you think that these sorts of actions called for by senators here, you know, domestically, or called for in Brussels or in Berlin, are these temporary things, or are we witnessing the unraveling of a system that we've come to expect is always there?
Yeah, that's a great question. My feeling is this, is that I think this is short-term rhetoric for a particular purpose. I do think we're going to see adjustment in supply chains around the world. I mean, we've seen that with this call for our significant number of our important drugs to be made in the U.S. so that we're not depending on another country. But the problem with going back to a system where you don't have this free trade is people become poor. Countries are poor because of that. They need trade to prosper. In countries who can make things cheaper, money will flow there. I think basic economics says that the globalization is probably here to stay. Are we going to see an adjustment in that? I think we will. I think we're already seeing that. But the world is such now. You could say the genie's out of the bag or whatever. That we have worldwide competition, and so investors are going to want to make money. So you're going to see this. How do we globalize? That we try to adjust for the problems that have come out during this pandemic.
Wonderful. And probably for our last question, is there anything that you see happening nationally in regards to the COVID response and particularly the immigration side of it that America is doing well, or do you feel like this is a rough patch when it comes to the policy actions that we'll look back with regret on how we handled this process, or is there something that you see happening that we can at least build on this area of success? Because most of the news is pretty negative these days, and I think some of the listeners would like a dose of maybe one thing we're doing right. So is there something
Yeah.
that you can
Well,
say you agree with, or that you feel could be built upon, or?
I think one thing that's interesting to me as an academic is we've got 50 states, and every state is affected differently and also reacting differently to this situation. So I think we're going to learn a lot in the future about what went right and what went wrong. I would hate, that this. It's, see, what I don't like as a taxpayer is it looks to me like it's become very political. That as most of the Democratic governors have closed down their states. Republicans want to open them. And I don't know. I think we'll probably do a lot of research to figure out what's going on there. But no politician wants to gets reelected by putting their constituents in danger. But how do we do that? So you say, what have we done well? I think in some states, what we've seen is a measured response. And I think what we get to in the United States in our current political situation, it's either all the way one way or the other. And what we need is what you talk about in game theory is a mixed strategy. It's not we don't go all the way open or all the way closed. How do we do somewhere in the middle where we can get things going again, yet protect our citizens? And I think I'd like to see a lot more of that talk. But I think what we're doing is it's a great experiment with 50 states, and we'll be able to figure out if it comes back if this pandemic or the coronavirus comes back in the fall during that typical flu season, then we're going to be able to hopefully have data on how do we work through this. So I think if I say, what have we done well? I think we've created an experiment. Different states have done it different ways, and hopefully we can learn from that.
Dr. Ken, thank you so much for being on today. It's been a real pleasure.
I've enjoyed it so much, and wish you the best of luck with your podcast.